Imagine you're Sean Connery. It's 1972. You just finished working on your last James Bond movie, and you don't want to do anymore. But you know, there aren't that many offers. I'm John Borman, and Sean, do you want to be in my movie? It's gonna be about the future. Burt Reynolds was going to be in it, but now he's sick. Can you do me this favor? You have to ask me what is it about?
You'll find out on set.
It's you're in the future and you're a killer. You kill for a god that flies in the sky, and you infiltrate this compound that's all of these immortal people. What am I wearing? This, and you pull out the G-string and the tie-eye boot. And suddenly he said, yes. Oh, welcome to the James Bond Complex. My name is Matt.
My name is Edgar.
We are a podcast that covers the entire James Bond phenomenon from filming to film and everything in between. And surprise, April's Fool, which means we're picking up some crap that has barely any link to the James Bond franchise. And it's
Yeah.
Edgar's luck that I forced him to watch one of Sean Connery's most notorious bombs of all time. No, we're not talking about the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. We are talking about
Zardoz.
Zardoz. Yeah.
Compared to this film, I mean, I remember it would have been during the early days of the pandemic when no one could go out. I remember we had a group watch with people for League of Extraordinarily Gentlemen. Extraordinary is the new R.R. Brown, like League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, and I seem to recall the group enjoying it. Just fine. But certainly compared to this, man,
With
you want to watch League of Extraordinary Gentlemen?
this is that's a special movie. I mean, I know it was your first. Am I mistaken? I think it was your first time watching this.
It was. So which it I mean, saying you forced me, I mean, I had never seen it, so I didn't really know what I was getting myself into. And I feel like I was the one that struggled this year with April Fool's ideas. Frankly, I don't think we've ever used any of my ideas. I don't think that's my best holiday, April Fool's. I don't come up with good ones. So you didn't really force me. I'd never seen it, so it's like I didn't know what I was getting myself into, so it was more of a surprise. Was it pleasant or not? I guess we will discuss, but
I can't wait. But the first time I saw images, because that famous picture of Sean Connery in his red
diaper.
costume, G-string, whatever you want to call it,
Ooh.
is once you see it, it's memorable. You have you see this and you're like, that's James Bond. He doesn't
Well,
look
was.
suave. It's horrible. And then I think in the early 2000s, when I was in Rimouski, when I made the choice between cable, internet, I picked cable, which in retrospect might have been a mistake, but I was exposed to a lot of weird movies because I picked all the movie channels to watch. And one day I was flipping through the channels and I came across this image of a giant granite head floating in the sky, and it was all diffused. And I'm like, what the hell, what is that? And I went back, and to my surprise, after a few minutes, Sean Connery shows up, and mind was blown. Did I watch the entire movie at the time? No, because I had something else to do or I got bored. It's only last year or during the pandemic, either last year or the year before, during the Great Plague. I watched it during a group watch, which I don't think you assisted, because if you did, you would have seen the movie. I think it was me and a few other people from our little community in Montreal, and we watch Zardoz, and you know, a movie that whatever you say during this podcast, for those curious, if you have, you can take a few libations before and during watching that movie. It'll help. It'll make the experience smoother. This is a weird ass movie. I want you to know, did I prep you correctly? Because I warn you that this movie is weird, full of ideas, and doesn't, you know, it's weird.
To be honest, I think my brain operates in a bit of a strange way when I head into films. I can, I'll answer your question more directly, but I'll do it in a slightly roundabout way. I'll try to make it quick. You know, I can read a handful of reviews or listen to a handful of reviews on YouTube and sort of like take a mental note of what the general consensus is about movie X that's coming out this Friday. But when I show up to the cinema or when I press play on Netflix, whatever the movie is, I have this bizarre capability of saying, those were the reviews, we're going to put those in the drawer, and we're just going to watch the movie. So I do remember you saying, you know, oh, it's weird, there's a lot of stuff in it, but I wasn't really thinking about what you had told me when I watched it. I don't know how I do that. I don't know why I do that. Maybe it's just subconscious. I'm an X-Men. My superpower is watching movies without remembering anything anybody told me or whatever I read. So I still, deference, you did talk to me about the movie before I saw it, but I subconsciously still went in cold, I guess. But what you said was accurate, though. No, now that I've seen it, yeah, there is a lot. It's a bit of a hodgepodge of a lot of ideas that, you know, are any of them developed? I guess we'll talk about some of them, but
it's an insane movie.
It's un pot-pourri.
Oh, definitely. There's so many stuff. I wrote my synopsis like a few minutes ago. I finished it, and it's full of mistakes. I skip entire plot points and characters. I try to condense them to something that, you know, the non-initiate can understand. So bear with me.
Do you want to do a share screen and I read it? Maybe switch it up a little bit.
Do you want to read it
with the mistakes?
Hold on, can I do that with this app? You know what? I can share. I'll share.
So let's regale the listeners in what is Zardoz. It's the future, the year 2293 to be precise. The road has been slit between Brutos and the Eternals. The Brutos are the common folk living in the wastelands. The Eternals are human beings that, through science, have become immortal beings. These immortal beings manipulate a third faction through the use of fake god figure represented in the form of flying giant granite head that arms the, quote, exterminators, end quote, and promotes the use of weapons. Because the gun is good. The penis size. Evil.
It is evil. The penis is evil.
Our story follows Zed, an exterminator that sneaks aboard Zardoz's head and kills an Eternal. Zed arrives.
I forgot to mention that Zardoz is the giant granite head.
Zed arrives in Vortex 4 and discovers that the Eternals are kept alive by an AI called the Tabernacle. Once captured by the Eternals, some want to see him killed. Others want to study the...
Oh, my God. Oh, okay, some want to see him killed. Coma? Others want to study the killer.
Zed is kept alive, but only for a few days. The exterminator uses this time to explore Vortex 4. He meets the apathetics, comatose immortals, and the renegades, rogue elements of society rendered permanently old. Eventually, it's revealed that Zed is the product of experimenting done by Arthur Friend, the immortal Zed had killed, who returns in a clone body. I don't remember that. It turns out that Zed realized he was being puppeted by a fake super being after reading The Wizard of Oz. You get Wizard of Oz. you get Wizard of Oz, period, Zardoz. Zed figures out a way to destroy the Tabarnak, turns the vortex force field off, which allows the exterminators to enter the vortex and kill the Eternals, while Zed and Consuela, the last of the Eternals, period, escape the carnage, period. Zed and his new mate find a cave where they spend the rest of their lives having a son and get old together and die. And thus ends Zardoz, Tabarnak.
Tabarnak. You know, I should have I started watching it for my second time in French, and I switched back to English later. So, you know, I was worried. Mm. But I should have brought it back to French just to hear the dub version of Sean Connery say, Tabarnak, I want to destroy the Tabarnak, you're destroying the Tabarnak.
Yeah, for those not famous... in the note, yeah, in French Canadian French. Good job, Edgar. In Canada, when the when most French Canadians use that word tabernacle, but the French version, it's sort of our feckish. You know, it's a very local. So saying tabernacle is like saying feckish.
It's particularly funny to think of Sean Connery saying tabernacle.
Yeah. So where do you want to start? Which I feel is this is like the most wide open. Where do you want to start? Movie we've ever reviewed on the show. I mean, to be frank, I mean, there's this and maybe Casino Royale 67, but I think this probably takes the cake.
Oh, this is. Is it more insane than? I mean, you know what? It's more cohesive, even though it doesn't make any sense. It goes all over the place, but it's from one mind. While like Casino Royale is a bunch of sketch that, you know, people are white. Nobody was really like, nobody got up and said, oh, I really want to do the story of Casino Royale justice when they made that 67 movie. Well, here, somebody had a crazy idea and a bunch of ideas that, you know, they were motivated and willing enough to put them on screen. Whether successful, maybe, but you know,
You're struggling.
We both watched one YouTuber, Robert Meyer Burnett, and he said something in one of his more recent, and he talked about watching old movies, and he and he said something that really got to me. Watching movies that are older. Mm-hmm. Is not for everyone. It's a skill that you learn, that you develop. Because
I think,
you
know, I heard that.
I said that to my brother's girlfriend, and she was kind of upset. And she said, "Well, I watch old Charlie Chaplin movies." And I said, "Yeah, but those last 10, 15 minutes tops have no dialogue and are, you know, it's comedy." Try to watch Metropolis, and I'm not saying that because I want to feel superior, but it's a skill. Like I'm not gonna go to a party and say you need to watch Nosferatu. No, most people don't, and I wouldn't recommend, but it to most people. But you know, that's extremely old movies. There are people who can't watch movies from the 80s.
Yeah,
my step nephew and my step niece, I tried to have them watch, what was that, The Never Ending Story.
Okay,
didn't last 5 minutes.
Oh, like, really? Interesting.
You know, the aesthetic, the I don't know if it's the look, the way the film looks, or the score, or but they can't. They really have this inability. And watching this movie, I'm always remembered about. it got into my brain. I'm like, oh my god, yeah, it's really not for everyone, because it's a movie from a different period. It's although it was made in the 70s, it feels like somebody took too much LSD in the 60s, experimented with drugs, and came up with a story, and it's a world that doesn't make any sense. Because it feels like I missed 10 chapters of a giant epic story. That's how the best idea I can describe that movie is. You know, you need the, you need, you know, when they first distributed the original 80s version of Dune, they had sort of an appendix, sort of a document that you could, oh, this is that planet and that planet and that planet. And only you need sort of this version to watch that movie and had it make any sense.
Maybe. But I guess in Dune's defense, it was an actual book. You know, the pamphlet was inspired by actual literary material, whereas this is from the mind of John Borman. He wrote and directed. So, you know, if anybody's to blame or praise, you know, it would be John Borman. I mean, I agree in the sense that it's about so many things. It's a little bit difficult to pinpoint what. I mean, and it's not that the questions it asks are uninteresting. I sort of got the vibe of, you know, myth making and myth busting and how that relates to you know, worship of deity. You have questions of immortality and when you're immortal, do you lose your humanity? You know, privileged societies and how they maltreat or experiment on other things, because, you know, the sort of one of the punchlines is, well, the rest of society was kind of excommunicated and these Eternals are very exclusive. And then Zed shows up and what's her face? Sam wants to experiment on him and study him. But it almost because they're now immortal. And because of that, they've lost some humanity. So they're colder than they used to be. Like, none of those are uninteresting. It's just, I'm not sure what the movie's doing with any of them. I think that's my biggest issue with it. What's the point? Like, it's fine. Okay, that's kind of interesting. Okay, that's kind of interesting. Well, that's kind of interesting, but what's the point? You know?
It has a lot of ideas, but goes nowhere with those ideas. They pose interesting questions, but, you know, what people remember are more the accoutrement of that film. Sean Connery wears a wedding dress. That's not, the red diaper thing is not the most outrageous. Sean Connery in a wedding dress is just, it's comedy gold. You just need to watch the production stills of that movie, and it's glorious.
Yeah, from what I didn't have that much time to, nor was I really going to research the film, but from what little I know, it was filmed in Ireland, pretty much predominantly one location, and apparently locals helped out with some of the costumes and sets, so I guess it has a very, I'm not saying Zardoz feels Irish, but it does sort of have that 70s UK out there in the country, let's just, you know, roll the camera and see what happens feel about it at times.
Tons of green pastures and it's a beautiful location. It's all over the place. And the cinematography is from Jeffrey Hansworth, who shot Superman the movie. It's a very good looking film, but it's weird. It's unusual. It's unlike, nobody's gonna ever remake that film, and I don't think you could. I mean, it feels like it comes from a personal idea, a personal place. But it's so weird. Even the director says, you know, in retrospect, he's like, I pushed too far for this movie, because he was even surprised that this movie bombed when it was released, and he was sort of weird, surprised that I think it's Fox that made that movie. They own the print. Approached him to do a restoration, and he's like, okay, I don't know if you're gonna be able, because Jeffrey shot the movie a particular way, and it's but they did, and apparently there's a Blu-ray somewhere that has tons of special features, and now it's owned by Disney. There are three Disney movies with Sean Connery. There's the aforementioned Zardoz. You have I think the League of the Gentlemen Extraordinary, or LJX, and the Leprechaun movie, Dardy O'Gill and the Little People.
Okay,
them all.
thought you were referring to the horror movie. I was like, I don't remember Sean Connery in that. So, well, let me, if you don't mind me spinning the table, gently, mind you, gently. I mean, this was your idea. You had seen it before. You knew what you were getting yourself into. Why did you, and I'm not insinuating anything, I'm genuinely curious, why did you want to watch
You know
this?
Why I suggested that? Because initially I thought it was going to be more than you and I doing the episode, but everyone pulled out. I don't know why. It might be because they knew the repetition of the movie, or they didn't have the time, or a combination of both. But, you know, I wanted to have Emery's opinion, because I know his wife would have, you know, Valerie would have laughed herself silly on the ground, like in a puddle, where he's like laughed. It is just, when you don't pay attention, or you're not used to that type of movie, it is absurd. And, you know, he's almost Sean Penn is almost like James Bond when you think about it in this movie, because he carries a gun, he works for the government, and he kills people.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess, I mean, I don't know if they did that one on purpose, but yeah, I suppose I see what you're saying there. It was a little bit interesting when he's first captured. And they're reading his mind. Are they reading his mind, or is he talking? I think both are happening. They're reading his mind, and he's talking. And he's saying that, you know, yes, I'm an exterminator, and I worked for Zardas, and I liked it. And, you know, I shagged women on the beach after we killed their men. And, you know, it was kind of interesting hearing, because this is only a couple years after Diamonds, 3 years after Diamonds. So it is interesting hearing Sean Connery, even though he's clearly not playing a very 007-esque character, but it was interesting hearing that voice explaining what he did for a living. It's like, yeah, it sounds a lot like what James Bond would do.
And the first time you see him on the film, he turns around, looks at the camera, and shoots the camera.
I don't remember that, actually.
And the first time you see the back of his head with the Zardos on it, and he turns around and shoots it. It's a reference to an old movie where there was a sort of a cowboy shooting the camera from the early films.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, it's James Bond shooting down the camera. Something we've seen.
That's what Zardoz. Movies like Zardoz exist for that, to make reference to silent films. Well, what do you think of the visuals? Because there's a lot going on here. There's the diamond, there's inside the diamond, there's Zardoz itself, himself, themself. There's the interrogation chamber when the Eternals are reading Sean Connery's mind. Like, there's a lot of, like, I'll give the movie this much. It's at least, you know, it's trying to be a little bit bold with what it looks like.
You know what? It's trippy. It's science fiction done from today's science fiction doesn't mean the same thing it did back then. I feel I'm not entirely certain of what I'm gonna say, but that's how I interpret it. Because today's science fiction, it means Transformers, Star Wars, space adventure, lasers, monsters, but back then. Back in the early, like, they had this science fiction stories, especially from books, had the Hegel quality. They were more intellectual fantasies or speculation. They were more based on exploring ideas by putting them in a different context. Today, it's giant robots punching each other. But
have you seen Denis Villeneuve's Arrival? That's pretty
You know, that's probably the exception. I heard about it, but it's probably the exception that confirms the rule, because that's a pure science fiction. Like another one that I can think, Gattaca. That's pure science fiction. Yeah. There's no giant robot punching each other. Like this, I don't know if it even has visual effects. But this one, the Zardoz does it that, except for the flying head. Most of the effects are done either in camera, or, you know, at one point there's a book that's floating and that Zardoz picks up. It's clearly held by wires. You can see sort of the effects, but it's more the way the they use projection a few times to create something that's looks about you understand. I think people probably have a better understanding of this movie than they did back in the 70s. Because something like AI, you know, I don't think was a might not even been have been a word back in the 70s.
How is already a movie monster by 74?
True. The tabernacle, they give science tools sort of religious names. The sort of the Eternals worship technology and the Brutals worship a fake god. You know, that movie has so many ideas that, you know, it just, if you look at the ideas, it's fascinating. But when you look at the story itself, you know, it's a dude that it's James Bond that walks in the villain's lair, escapes, runs around for a bit, and destroys the base. Like that's the movie. And except a babe at the end.
Right. Well, what's her face?
And it's like Charlotte, no time to die because he dies at the end.
Right. And he also looks like dust at the end of Zardoz. And there's not a whole lot of action. It's not an action film, really. It's certainly a very idiosyncratic movie in the sense that, I mean, we're sort of tiptoeing around some spoilers, but even like the punchline for the Eternals at the end, once their belief system is cracked, let's say, and then this other band shows up. Well, the band Zed used to work for, really. They show up, and what happens in that scene, it's a little bit... I had no idea what to feel during that. Like, I understood it because the Eternals had been, the Eternals had been shown the light as far as, you know, to appreciate life, you have to appreciate something else. And then the exterminators show up, so you can guess the rest. And so it's supposed to be like a positive thing while we see people get senselessly massacred, but it's supposed to be positive. Like, it's a very... The whole vibe of this film is quite strange. It's very, on an emotional level.
A genocide almost. At the end.
Kind of. On an emotional level, I don't know if it's confused because it's from John Borman. He wrote it and he directed it. So it's all him, but for everybody else, it's a little confusing, I find. It's, yay, everybody's getting slaughtered.
Yay,
they're happy.
Death.
It's like, what?
But at the same time, they're oppressing the Brutals and, you know, the exterminators. It's just that, you know, it ends very quickly. It's very abrupt. You're like, okay, but what does it mean? I don't know. I wonder if that Blu-ray that came out has a commentary track, because somebody needs to explain. Like, I understand a little bit more, but I think I'll have to rewatch this movie to understand it better, because there's so many things that are like, okay, what? Somebody let you? There's so much nudity in that movie. Like, you don't see male genitalia, but you see a bunch of buttocks and. Boobs.
You can kind of tell, you know, that Sean Connery's package is pretty massive, but there are a lot of tops getting ripped off in this film, which I guess is another thing that was believe me, listeners, I'm not romanticizing this, but that's how they made movies back then, especially in this epoch. 70s, when things could get a little bit grungy, especially if they weren't in the United States. Although the American, that's where many of the greats emerge, is the 70s. I certainly don't want to badmouth the American directors of the 70s. But yeah, things could get a little bit more down and dirty back then, and just ripping off a woman's top. Nobody really batted an eye. You just stick that in. Just stick it in the movie.
Like, oh, show the boob. That's a boob. It's just, you know, it's before the PG-13. I wonder if it's, honestly, I wonder if it's not G-rated. because there's not that much, there's violence, but you know, it's like, it can't be R-rated. Today wouldn't be. Today it would be maybe for the nudity, but it's weird because it's, you know, it's a movie that I'm like, even though you see nudity, it's not. It's kind of gross when Sean Connery rips the top off. You're not aroused at all. No. It's very disturbing to see that sort of behavior. I'm like, okay, we're cheering for the rapist now.
Mm-hmm. So what do you like about the movie?
Like I said, the aesthetics. I love the ideas, the science fiction ideas. I love the ideas that it asks, and it's also very funny because there are moments like somebody and Sean Connery. Okay, imagine you're Sean Connery. It's 1972. You just finished working on your last James Bond movie, and you don't want to do anymore. But you know, there aren't that many offers. I'm John Borman, and Sean, do you want to be in my movie? It's gonna be about the future. Burt Reynolds was going to be in it, but mm-hmm. now he's sick. Can you do me this favor? And you have to ask me what is it about.
You'll find out on set.
No, it's you're in the future and you're a killer. You kill for a god that flies in the sky, and you infiltrate this compound that's all of these immortal people. What am I wearing? This. And you pull out the g-string and the tie-eye boots, and Sean Connery said yes, and he said yes to the wedding dress. It's insane. It is insane. Like, you watch that, nobody, like, it is the worst, the problem, the most embarrassing, I mean, I'm not going to say worst, but it's the most embarrassing film that any of the previous former Bond actors have done. Like, it's so embarrassing because of the red diaper. I mean, even Shatner in the 60s never wore something as outrageous as that.
It is true. Strange uniform to be a killer. Wouldn't you need some armor?
Probably be like always cold.
Yeah, little bit odd, but that's. I mean, the costumes are. There's no question that Sean Connery has the oddest costume of the bunch. I didn't find it as distracting as it was hyped up to be. I'm not saying you hyped it up, but sort of, you know, everybody's seen, even if you haven't seen Zardoz, you know, you've seen that still where he's like on the beach with his legs spread wide open.
Race package in full view almost.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we've all seen that picture, but it's not as distracting. Maybe I was trying to get invested in the story, which I suppose there is one. I mean, there's enough there to carry it to the end. I think one of my biggest complaints is I find some sequences for a movie that's not even 2 hours long. Some of the sequences just go on a little bit long, like when the Eternals. Is it all of the Eternals or is it just Charlotte Rampling? I can't remember. But when they give him the little diamond, here's our knowledge. We're transferring our knowledge to you. And that thing goes on for, it feels like 35. I'm sure it's only two, but it feels like it goes on for half a freaking hour.
Yeah, there are stuff I watched in two settings because it's a weird movie, but it's also there are some moments you're like, okay, it's taking forever. But there are gold moments when they first interrogate Zed, and they're very mocking of him as a human being. They basically say that he's almost an animal, or actually an animal, and they try to stimulate him, and they show him what is essentially porn to see his reaction. Because in the future, men can't have erections because their mortality, they don't need to procreate, I guess, and they can't get it up anymore. And everyone's mostly bored, and so bored that some people, you know, like Archer friend, I don't, and not a, they have a hipster quality because, you know, so I'm bored, I'm gonna put a fake mustache on my face.
Yeah.
This is what? It's really guess... weird. But I guess you would be if you were immortal.
I guess you would be if you were immortal. You would get bored after a while.
You'd be bored after. living for like it's 2220. Almost 200 years that they've been alive, and you know, amassing in knowledge, and not after a while, you know everything you need to know, and you know the only thing that's left to uncover is death. You know, that's why it's in fiction, when people want absolute knowledge, they usually get killed, because that's the absolute.
Yes, it is. It is indeed. What did you think of the little? There's sort of a mini punchline before the climax, where we discover, I guess, what Zardoz is and where the entity got its name. Like, it's so strange. I don't know.
Is it
a joke? Am I supposed to take this seriously?
It's weirdly shot. It's the Sean Connery's reaction is just as bizarre, but you know. It's a less effective version of the Statue of Liberty at the end of Planet of the Apes. It's a spoiler for Planet of the Apes. Planet of the Apes is Earth. It's a less effective version of that. But it's like, it's a Shyamalan twist before Shyamalan. It's like, oh my God, Zardoz is old Wizard of Oz.
Which, like, it's. I mean, the details of that are kind of revealed in the opening sequence when Zed has been clandestinely flying in the Granite Head, and he sort of fires the person who we presume was controlling the head. So I did not think specifically of the Wizard of Oz. Not really sure why. I'm not sure why that punchline was needed. I'm not sure why that's in the movie.
They had to fill out time. I don't know when. There is nothing. It's also like, have you seen Logan's Run?
I don't think so.
Because it's almost the same thing with people living in an idyllic world, and the twist is that when you get old, you get into what they call the carousel. And basically, you're kicked out, and a robot freezes you to death, and you're gone. But okay. During Logan's Run, he escapes, and he finds out that there's this other world out there, and he comes back, and it's more cohesive, and it's probably a better film, if I'm particularly honest. But it was made in the same time, mid '70s. Okay. It has a similar look where people are dressed funny, and you know, it's very like people are super into having there's an obsession with sex, because I mean the Eternals don't bang, but you know what, the Exterminators, they do bang, and not just with their guns.
Bang, bang.
Bang bang. So I don't know, man. This movie is I wish we had other people on the call on the podcast to talk about it.
What did can you make heads or tails of the not the denouement, but sort of the explanation where the dude who was flying the head is not that's really
Archer,
dead.
That's Archer friend. That's right, Archer the guy friend. Who comes back in the clone body at the end.
In a clone body, okay.
So when and then you die, the tabernacle sort of more or less is a computer that captures your memories, and you know, he starts cooking a new version of you and implants your memories inside the body. So you can't actually kill yourself. If you try, you're gonna. It's for them. It's Groundhog Day. They
don't
have anything new to learn. They're stuck in limbo. That's why some the epithetics are just like comatose and don't really do anything. And if you rebel against the notion of, you know, maybe we shouldn't be immortals, well, you get transformed into an old man, which looks You know, it's Sam that has half of his face turned into an old person, and he's like a proto version of Two-Face.
Yeah, a little bit of a little Gotham City detour there. But that was kind of interesting. It was, I actually didn't mind that concept of, you know, they can't die. Well, they can't die,
but they can be born. There are those three factions within the Eternals.
More specifically, the idea of, well, since people can't die, or it takes a very, very long time for them to die, and they get reincarnated anyways, or reconstructed, since it's going to take you so long to die, and since you've been such a naughty person, given that we can't kill you, you're going to continue living, but as a really old person, it's not going to be nearly as much fun. Like, I kind of like that as a punishment under the present circumstances. That was kind of interesting. Again, it's these little ideas where you sort of go, like, oh, what would that be like if you were immortal, but you had to live as like a super old person for a long time? That sounds terrible. But again, it's one of many little ideas that are, you know, they're there, and you can sort of mull on them a little bit while Sean Connery rips off another top, and
and there's some irony that, you know, usually the rebel is associated with youth and sort of more younger people, and in that society, it's the opposite. The rebels are the old people, and you know, new ones are the conformists, the young ones. Then there's some irony there.
Was there a? I mean, there are quite a lot of locations in this. Sets, really. I mean, it's mostly in the same locale, but a lot of sets. I kind of like the. There's a library that's kind of interesting, and then there's like this storage room with a lot of busts, which was weird. Yeah. It was like busts of their old gods. I thought that was kind of interesting, and I think when the SHIT hits the fan and they start destroying the busts, but then the movie decides to play in backwards so that we can see them like coming back together. Like, there's some interesting visuals going on. I'm also struggling a little bit to latch on to something. I have a feeling I'm not going to remember much about this movie in a few months from now.
I've watched it literally 48 hours ago, and I had to go to Wikipedia to write a synopsis. Some moments stick with you. I mean, Sean Connery being tested to see if he can get an erection, and finally he sees he looks at the Consula, who's played by somewhat famous actress Charlotte Rampling. I knew that name. Mm. Like, I recognize her as a younger woman. But when he looks at her, it's like, and you don't see it, but people look, oh, he's getting aroused. That's gold. That's gold. Like,
why does she turn? Because she wants to kill him. She's afraid of him. She thinks he's a menace to their perfect little society.
She's that total Bond girl. Like, oh, I hate him. I hate him. I hate him. Until, you know, she gets a little sampling. I don't remember. Honestly, I don't remember why she turns. But, you know, it's do you remember why Pussy Galore change her attitude? Because it's Sean Connery. That's why it's Sean Connery's like uber charisma that, you know, just, oh, I want to bang him. That's why, I mean, an alternate version with Burt Reynolds, which, I mean, he has but a similar quality to Sean Connery. It's like that macho quality. He has, like, he wouldn't have cared about getting dressed in the red diaper. I can definitely see Burt Reynolds, and especially back in the early 70s, like, that guy was pretty buff.
And that's one thing. I mean, Sean Connery's a tall person. He's sort of big bodied. I'm not going to go so far as to say that he's out of shape for someone in his mid 40s. He's looking pretty decent, but he's definitely not in, you know, this is not the Dr. No, you know, taking a shower in laughing waters.
Compared to Sean modern Connery. Standards, he's fat. Like, today, you have to be, you have to be Chris Evans, you have the Chris Hemsworth, yeah, the one of those Chrises that gets jacked for their film. You can't be normal person anymore. And when you're going to be bare-chested, because, you know, you see somebody like Pierce Brosnan, even when he did that movie with Rene Russo that we reviewed, that Thomas Crown Affair, when he's butt naked, they probably, you know, you probably be forced to go to dinner. You need to be like, have bigger muscles, bigger, bigger, bigger.
Yeah.
Unrealistic standard, but no, he's perfectly fine. I would love to be Sean Connery, mid 40s Sean Connery. Like, I have that physique. Give me that physique. I'll take it. Happy.
Yeah, I know. Definitely different. Different standards back in those days. That, you know, it can be argued more realistic standards. About Sean Connery, though, what do you think of his performance in this movie? I don't know what to make of it exactly. There's some scenes where I feel like he's doing some acting, and not bad acting. And then there are other scenes where I'm like, I think he's just standing looking at Charlotte Rampling.
Well, I think he was just looking at Charlotte Rampling, to be honest with you. When especially she was quite attractive in her younger days, but he's adequate. I don't want to. I want to see that he's bad. It's such a weird story. And you probably heard the story why he made the league. Why he picked the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen as his final movie. He was offered a bunch of big movies that he passed on. He was offered The Matrix 2. Even the first one. I think even the first one he was offered the role of Morpheus. He was offered The Lord of the Rings, and he passed on maybe Harry Potter 2. I think he was offered Dumbledore.
Dumbledore.
I'm doubled bored by Harry Potter. Now, Dumbledore. I don't know. I'm not the target audience for that. I was too old for those films. But anyway, he was offered those parts, and he said that he didn't understand what the movie is and the concept. He said, "No, the next thing I don't understand, I'm going to do that."
Okay.
That's how it feels like. Bill Murray getting the role of Garfield because he thought he was working with those two brothers who made the Fargo.
Oh yeah, I know who you're talking. Oh, Coen Brothers.
Coen Brothers, like
the Coen Brothers were going to make Garfield.
Yeah, but there's another Coen that wrote the script for Garfield, and when Bill Murray got the script, he thought it was dealing with one of the Coen brothers who had a similar name. If it's the first name or their last name that they spelled differently, but that's the legend. That's why he got tricked into making Garfield. Almost feel as the same thing as with that Sean Connery and League of Extraordinary Gentlemen story. And I think it's probably because he doesn't, like, the performance he gives at times feels like you feel the confusion of Zed because Sean Connery doesn't understand what's going on in the movie. He just showed up. They said, "We're going to pay you I don't know what was his acting fee, but probably most of the budget probably went into his salary. I wouldn't be surprised if he's the thing that cost the most for the movie. Because I mean, special effect wise, you have a few effects with the flying head, and that's about it. There's no space lasers. There's no
No, it's giant pretty. Explosion. It's a small scale film, you know. Despite all the thing, I mean, there's some visual flourishes, like near the end where Zed, where the hell is he? He's in the diamond. He's in the tabernacle. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like a Lady from Shanghai, Room of Mirrors type of a thing.
It's very trippy.
Yeah, I like Eva, I would say that's another one that goes on a little bit too long, but. You know, that's sort of a visual flourish. There's the interrogation room. It's, you know, it's not like the movie doesn't try to do a few things from a sort of an ostentatious visual perspective, but it is a little bit overall, it's a bit muted. You know, it's even the costuming is, I mean, it's a little bit weird. You can tell it's not really of this era, but it's not, you know, nobody's they don't look like robots. They don't have cyborg eyes. They don't have you know, it's like an alternate universe, an alternate timeline of you know, des gens qui habitent la ferme. But it still sort of looks like that, kind of. It's just a little bit weird.
Yeah, they just you know, they shot this movie, like you said, in a farm and put people into hand-me-downs, leftovers, costumes from Star Trek, the 60s Star Trek TV show.
I did like the idea of the apathetic people, where, well, I think we were saying this. Forgive me, listeners, if we're actually repeating ourselves at this point. But I did like the apathetic people are not in the movie very much, but I did like that idea where, you know, you would become apathetic to the extent where this little community of people who literally did not care about anything at all anymore just lived, if you can call that living. That's kind of an interesting idea. And then they start kissing Sean. They start kissing.
And that's when they start. Zed. Like, I don't remember when they start sort of coming back alive.
Yeah, because one of the apathetic women kisses Zed. And then she kisses another lady, and they're sort of like spreading, life. I guess
it's like a virus, STD. Yeah. Have Sean Connery's STD. Have Sean Connery's STD. Have it.
Thank you very much. I will. Thank you. It's like the kiss of life. I guess that's what that's supposed to be. Of course, it would come from Sean.
That's from Diana D.
Is that
the kiss of life?
In the hospital on the boat there. Yeah. I don't know. Great scene. In Dying of the Day, I mean.
Memorable.
Right. Yeah, I'm not sure if this one's that memorable, but I guess, you know, another one of those interesting little ideas. A lot of Beethoven in this film. I'm not sure why. Beethoven knows how to rock a good tune, but I don't understand what's... maybe a little pretentious.
You know, that's what the director said. So I wouldn't be surprised. I'll check if the Blu-ray has some commentary tracks, and depending if it does or doesn't, I might actually pick it up just to see what am I supposed to get. Some I do, some I don't, some I'm just perplexed.
I don't know if it's a movie that, I don't regret us having decided to do it. It, you know, makes for an okay April Fool's episode, but I mean, I don't think I'm going to buy the Blu-ray just to hear the...
I won't force you. Emery missed a chance. We're not covering this movie ever again. If I do it, it's on my own time. I'm not forcing anyone anymore to watch this movie.
Zardoz Reloaded.
No, we're not doing Zardoz Reloaded or Second Edition, nothing. This is the only Zardoz episode we're doing.
Yeah, do you have the novelization?
No, I don't have the comic book either. Uh-huh, I don't think there was. I mean, that movie was a big flop. I have this last anecdote. I think it's one of the interviews. I did watch some interviews with John Borman, and he said, or I don't know where I got it, but that last, Sean Connery didn't like heavy prosthetic makeup. And you watch his movies, I don't think he's ever, like, except for the wig that he wears, depending on the movie that he's doing, because the dude was bald. But sometimes that's the maximum makeup you could put on him, is put him a wig, put him some meal to hide the blemishes. He didn't like putting makeup. But the ending of the movie, he's in heavy makeup.
Yeah.
And it's multiple fade-ins so they can slap more makeup, make him look older, put another wig, slap. They shot it, and there was a problem with the camera. And he was like, oh, no, I'm going to have to, like, watch it again. That's exactly what he said. He said, tabernacle. So they shot it a second time. At that time, like, one of the technicians actually messed up and ruined the film. And something was going to... It was so mad. He hit him or, you know, people had to restrain him from not killing that technician.
Right.
So they had to shoot it the third time. And you watch it, he looks pissed off. He looks like he doesn't want to be there. He's just like, can we go on? Can we go? I'm going to go home. I'm going to go home. Guys, can we finish this? He looks so bored and so insanely angry. It's just,
Maybe he has sensitive skin. Maybe he has sensitive skin. I don't know. Let's see.
Oh, but it's a cumbersome makeup. Not everyone does that. I mean, some of the Star Trek actors that, you know, wore AV prosthetics, today they say, no, I wouldn't do that anymore. I can't do it. It's physically taxing. You sweat like a mofo when you do makeup like that, especially in the 70s. So you watch the prosthetic that he's wearing, they're not good prosthetics. Even for the time, I don't think they're good. It's horrible makeup job. But I guess when your star is doing that, it's just doing the same scene, you're like,
just slap it on, get it over.
It's Zardoz, so.
I think the prosthetics look a little bit heavier on Charlotte Rampling. There's one of those images where she looks pretty terrible in the sense that she's like literally turning to dust, it almost seems like.
She looks like a witch at times. She belongs in the Army of Darkness, and she should be fighting Bruce Campbell.
What's his face? Yeah. Groovy.
Hail to the King, baby. I'm done with Zardoz.
Yeah, I'm done too, man. I don't think what's this? What's this in my living room? Oh my goodness, it's a floating head.
The penis is evil. The gun is good. Do you have people everywhere?
We do have penis everywhere. I mean, we do have people everywhere.
Don't muck my accent.
No, it's no, mais en français on dit pénis. With the we have the penis everywhere, and it's
tabernacle.
Tabernacle.
That's the only podcast episode where we can see tabernacle.
The jamesbondcomplex.com.
Zardoz.com. Is there a Zardoz.com? Let me check.
is there?
It's perfect. If you type Zardoz.com, it's a picture that says retired. There's an image of you've reached. Now it says, this is it. Congratulations, you have reached the last page on the internet. You can log off, go outside, and play.
Oh man, that's good. That's good. That's pretty good. We're on Instagram at the James Bond Complex, Facebook, the James Bond Complex. You can watch some of our stuff on YouTube. Search for the James Bond Complex, subscribe to the channel, and tickle us with a thumbs up button. We're at Podcastings for Anchor. What's it called now?
Spotify, Spotify podcast, whatever its name is. I don't remember. They changed it. It used to be anchor.fm, but they're bought and they changed the name.
So podcasters, anchor.fm, and Google Podcasts, Spotify, Poutine Tabarnak Québec.
Balado Québec et Diffusion.
And the best ones in the world. If you truly want to worship deity, you go to Apple Podcasts and search for the James Bond Complex. Subscribe. Write a review and leave us a 5-star glowing golden gun review. Let us know how badly you would appreciate death if you were immortal. That is a penis. Just as Zardoz is not returning, he's done.
Nobody's rewarding that. Nobody.
You never say never, man. But James Bond returns. We're not sure when, but he'll show up in a couple years. We're assuming, but you don't have to worry, because the James Bond Complex, we will not wait a couple of years. At the time this episode comes up, I think it'll be barely a few days. I think today's a Saturday as we release this, as I recall.
Yeah.
Clearly, we're recording this in advance, but I think we're talking quote on a Saturday end quote. So we'll be back in a few days. Sur ce, merci, toujours un plaisir et à la prochaine.
Au revoir.
Mm-hmm.